This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Tan Chung Han, and this is the Breakfast Grill. Today on the show, we look back at the year and explore a theme that has consistently emerged throughout 2017, disruption in transportation. And to get a sense how quickly new technology can overtake the incumbents, we spoke to Tony Seba, a lecturer in entrepreneurship, disruption, and clean energy at Stanford University.
It's a fact that technology disruptions happen very quickly, but mainstream analysts usually have these linear projections that fail to see the dramatic and rapid changes that happen when technology disruptions happen. And just to give you an example, just 10 years ago, Apple and Google came up with a smartphone, and now essentially everybody around the world has smartphones, and it only took 10 years. Uber and the ride-hailing, for instance, just came out around 2009, and only 8 years later, Uber's bookings are higher than the whole U.S. taxi industry. So these disruptions happen very quickly. In society, in many cases, is not ready for these disruptions and their implications.
Tony then explains the catalysts for such disruptions.
The disruptions are caused by a convergence of different technologies, which enable new business models, and also enable product innovations. And it's that convergence, rather than any one technology alone or any one business model alone, that causes disruptions. So essentially, transport as a service or TaaS is the convergence of two technologies, autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles, and the business model of ride hailing. So that's what we call AEVs or TaaS. And when that convergence happens, essentially when level 4 or 5 autonomous vehicles are approved and ready, which we think is going to happen in 2021. But even if it doesn't happen in 2021, it's a 10-year disruption. So even if you assume that it's going to start 2022 or 2023 and so on, autonomous vehicles, essentially it's a 10-year disruption. Tesla says that they're going to have it by 2019. Others say by 2020. We're assuming that it's 2021, but whenever level 4 or 5 autonomous vehicles are approved, essentially that day, the combination of autonomous, electric, and on-demand will be up to 10 times cheaper than gasoline car ownership. So essentially two things are going to be disrupted. One is, gasoline, internal combustion engine automobiles, and also the concept of individual ownership of cars.
So perhaps the days are numbered of when you can efficiently own a car that's powered by a gasoline internal combustion engine. And automakers, as well as tech giants, are getting ready for such a future, even though the specifics remain unclear. At least that's according to the CEO of Volkswagen Passenger Cars Malaysia, Eric Winner.
What we see is that around the different car manufacturers, there are a lot of different initiatives coming up. And not only car manufacturers, we also see this with Apple, we see it with Google, we see it with Tesla. There are very interesting things happening currently. What's, let's say, funny to see is that many of these things are not happening in the settled automotive industry, but they are happening actually in America. They are happening in Silicon Valley. So what you see now is that most of the car manufacturers are opening up their offices in Silicon Valley to make sure that they are a part of the development of autonomous driving of electrical vehicles. What Volkswagen is doing on this, I'm sure that Volkswagen is fully involved in this development and is fully taking advantage and being a part of the development. What is really happening there behind the scenes, I cannot tell you because we simply don't know it, because this is still, a future scenario. But that something is going to change within our industry, that something is going to change within our business model, I'm convinced, and that this is going to happen probably faster than we all would expect, I'm also convinced.
Another factor driving disruption in transportation, the need to reduce pollution. In September, we spoke to Dato' Dennis Chua on The Grill. He is the founder and executive director of Eklimo, the company in Malaysia that makes electric motorbikes. He reminded us of transportation's negative consequences on the environment.
These are one of the points that I always remind everybody, even to our colleagues, is that every liters of petrols that we burn is actually generating 2.36 kilo of CO2. Of course, we cannot see it through the air, but there is a formulations where it's actually 1 liter producing 2.36 kilo of CO2. For instance, at our scooter, when you run 100 kilometer per charge, it's equivalent to you're using 3 liter of petrol for the normal combustion bikes. So you just imagine that running 100 kilometer, you can save how much CO2? That is like times 3 of 2.36 kilo. So definitely, when you talk about environment, the climate change, these are the one of the important criteria that people must be aware of it. We always take it for granted that our air quality is good, it's nice. But comparing 15 years back, when I ride motorbikes on the road, you still feel that the environment is nice and clean. But today, every weekend, I still ride bikes. You will feel that very big particles like dust hitting on your face. So the environment are changing right now.
However, are new technologies really all that green? Apparently, it's not that straightforward. The CEO of Burma's Auto, Dato' Sri Benyo, shares his doubts.
These are very expensive technology, electrical and hybrids. Do we really need them? Because batteries, electrical vehicles have big batteries and these are heavy metal. So it comes back to the original concept of mining for heavy metal as the demand for battery increases. So these are environmental issues. To charge the battery, you need energy. Cheapest is coal energy. Coal energy is the cheapest, right? Unless you have natural source of energy, like in the European areas where you have hydro, electrical energy, you have solar energy. But these are all very expensive to develop. So it's a balanced situation that you have to look at. Where areas, where do you really need that? Is it pollution really the critical issue? Because the demand for transportation will always be there.
Still, there's little doubt that policymakers are under pressure to curb pollution from vehicle emissions. But that could have political implications. According to the chairman of Crossrail Limited, Sir Terry Morgan, whom we had on The Grill in January, well, he says new technology is the inevitable solution.
You may or may not know, but in London, there's a congestion charge. So if you want to drive into London daily, you pay a charge for the cost. That was intended to try and reduce the amount of traffic flow. Of course, politicians are very wary of suggesting that they're going to take people out of cars. And indeed, the technologies that are now starting to emerge in terms of creating less damage to the environment, you know, where cities are now talking about banning internal combustion engine traffic in cities by 2030, is it, to me, inevitable. And that's a question of a new generation of technology in cars and, indeed, the whole aspect about how do you make most efficient use of the car that you own. And maybe, indeed, you might not even own a car. You'll just rent it for the time you need it and hand it back.
And sharing vehicles can certainly alleviate pressures on local infrastructure. Here's Stanford University lecturer Tony Seba again.
Today, we use cars when we own them 4% of the time. When they're owned by fleets like Uber or Didi or Ola and so on, essentially, they can be used 40% of the time. So they're going to be running around all day as opposed to being parked all day 90% of the time. So we're going to have a fleet that's 80% smaller, which means you don't need the infrastructure, which means that, you know, the more developed countries that have this highway infrastructure and parking and so on, we're going to have excess parking. I mean, 80% of parking spaces are going to be obsolete, and a lot of our road space is going to be obsolete also.
When it comes to inefficient use of cars, Malaysians are certainly guilty. We spoke to Leon Fong about this back in May. He was then Uber Malaysia's general manager, but has since left that role.
You look at typical car utilization rates in Malaysia. You own a car, 95% of the time it's spent in either your car park somewhere or, you know, stuck without you driving it. Right, that's a huge amount of wastage, fact. And not only is the car being underutilized 95% of the time, even when you're using it, probably another 90% of the time, you're the only driver in the car and none of the seats are being occupied. So what we realize is ride sharing for a country which has a tendency to obviously love driving, to have a tendency to actually love buying cars, it totally makes sense because we can ensure these cars are more productive while improving urban mobility services. And ultimately, you know, what we saw was ride-sharing actually brought to Malaysians more choice.
Coming up in just a bit, we'll take a closer look at the potential economic benefits stemming from disruption in transportation. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run as we hark back on the year that was on The Breakfast Grill. This year, we spoke to many industry players and thought leaders from the transportation sector, and almost all of them spoke on the theme of disruption in transportation. One of them was Sir Terry Morgan, chairman of Crossrail Limited. And in his interview, Sir Terry briefly lays out the opportunity cost of inefficient transportation.
Look at how much money you must be spending on people sat in cars going to work in the morning. Wouldn't it be much more productive if they could travel to work on a fixed time, confident they're going to get there on time, and be more productive?
Tony Seba, lecturer in Entrepreneurship, Disruption and Clean Energy at Stanford University, also weighs in on the opportunity cost of inefficient transportation.
So what are the benefits for society and for individuals? So on day one, an average American family spends about $10,000 a year owning a car. With transport as a service, on day one, essentially the average American family would save about $6,000 a year, $6,000. And that's huge. Essentially, when you put it at the country level, that's $1 trillion in consumer savings, meaning that consumers are going to keep $1 trillion in their pockets or spend it. And consumer spending is 71% of GDP, which means that this is going to create an additional $1 trillion of economic growth for the U.S. or other countries when that economics apply to them too. The other area where there's going to be economic growth is that the time that we waste driving, essentially, if we can work, you know, nurses can be on the phone nursing, or doctors or consultants or teachers. If we work, or even if we sleep or shop or entertain while not driving, essentially, that would create an additional $1 trillion in productivity growth. So these are two incremental $1 trillion boosts to the economy that would come from the transport as a service disruption. And this is for everybody, right? But the country that creates the original technologies that win in autonomous and electric vehicles and batteries and so on are going to be, imagine the Silicon Valleys of essentially this new disruption of transportation. Because again, autonomous electric vehicles are going to be computers on wheels. So this is a whole new technology infrastructure that's going to generate trillions of dollars in wealth to the countries that essentially lead the disruption.
Let's now zoom in on electric or hybrid vehicles. When speaking to industry players, we ask them if Malaysians are open to such new technologies. Here are some observations from Dato' Dennis Chua, founder of the only Malaysian manufacturer of electric scooters, Iklimo.
I can see that especially this 1 year, there are a lot more people having interest on going on electric vehicle. not because of it's something that is nice. Definitely, it's nice to drive, but the driving force for people to go into hybrids or electric, it's you actually can save costs. First thing is the maintenance, and you don't have to put petrol. Of course, there's also questions of after 5 years or after 8 years, I have to change battery, that is costly. But if you look at it along the way, it's definitely cheaper to use electric vehicles than a combustion vehicle. So this is proven, but the question raised is because the moment that you want to change battery, they have to fork out a hefty sum. But you take it as a long run, it's definitely cheaper to use electric vehicle than combustion.
We also spoke to Akbar Daniel, Group Vice President for Honda Malaysia, back in March, for his insights into hybrid vehicles.
So if you talk about hybrid itself, you know, there's a lot more education need to be done. When we started back then, I think when we conducted a survey, why the customer bought the car was purely because of the car price, you know, because of the incentive received.
Right.
And then the car price went down. And then, you know, that was why people thought that it's very valuable, because other countries, the hybrid cars are actually amongst the top variant in the lineup. But in Malaysia, it's the other way around. So people bought that because of the value of the product itself. So, but like what I said, moving forward, there's a lot more communication need to be done to educate the consumer out there. But again, I think recently with the concern on the fuel price and whatnot, I think the customers start to have that feeling towards the need towards having a fuel-efficient vehicle.
As for Volkswagen Passenger Cars Malaysia CEO Eric Winner, he remains uncertain about Malaysia's demand for hybrid vehicles compared to Europe.
At the same time, what we see with Volkswagen in Europe is that they have a strong development of the hybrid vehicles, the plug-in hybrid vehicles. Currently, we are not offering these products in Malaysia. Of course, we are looking into this because we also see the trend in the Malaysian markets, especially on the plug-in hybrid vehicles. So yes, we are looking into it. We do not have a solid plan yet when or if we will introduce these cars into the Malaysian market.
Even with all this talk about electric and hybrid vehicles, Eric still sees a future where new and old can coexist.
What I do see on a worldwide scale is that there is still a future for diesel. If we also look into different brands, they continue to develop diesel engines. Diesel engines are getting cleaner and cleaner. Diesel engines are getting more fuel efficient. On the other hand, what we see is that there is a tremendous trend into the direction of alternative engines like battery-driven engines, electrical vehicles, hybrid vehicles. And I would say this is the major trend which is going on now into the automotive business.
Ultimately, new technologies will achieve greater success if local stakeholders can engage with the disruptor. Here's Uber's perspective, according to former general manager Leon Fong, who spoke to us back in May.
Well, I think when we first launched, a lot of people actually saw us as a disruptor, right? And in some sense, you know, we did disrupt a certain business model. But I think over, you know, the course of time, what we ultimately aim to be is to actually become partners, right? Partners with the government to enable progress. And I think in order for us to become truly partners, there needs to be some form of a framework, regulatory framework in place for us to truly partner with the government agencies, with the transportation ecosystem to really achieve our goals. So we've actually seen the sentiment improve. To be honest, we've had, you know, conversations with multiple stakeholders from the transportation ecosystem, including, you know, taxi associations. And these conversations have been very positive, right? With the goal of seeing, you know, how we can work together to really improve public adoption and public perception towards public transportation. So that's the number one goal. And ultimately, you know, from my perspective, you know, whether it's the MRT, whether it's the LRT or even taxis, we're all actually on the same side of the coin. Ultimately, you know, what we really want to challenge is total miles driven, right? Especially when people are still driving themselves in their own cars, that is basically not great for overall public adoption in terms of, you know, urban mobility services.
Meanwhile, the transfer of new technology is benefiting some 3,000 Malaysians working at Honda's plant in Melaka. Honda also assured them that robots will not take over their jobs, at least for the next few years. Here's Honda's Akbar Daniel again.
A lot of technology has been transferred to Malaysia to be allocated. I mean, but if you take a look at the Melaka factory, if you had a chance one day, if you visit the factory itself, you know, you won't see anything like it's a spaceship kind of technology being introduced over there. Pretty much, you know, a lot more human involved over there. Not so much on the robotics, because we believe that robots is actually to assist to complete the human process. So it's not to replace human, but it's more to assist, I would say. So if you take a look at the operation stuff, still a lot more human involved over there. And, well, not to say like too advanced and stuff like that, but how to keep it, you know, how to keep it at a good condition is one of the key points. If you automate the whole thing, then what's going to happen to these 3,000 people working in Melaka plant itself? So I think it's a give and take, you know. So we need to take a look at, like what I said earlier, you know, we need to add in robots to, for example, like some advanced technology that we introduced to the car itself. Well, you might need that. There are some areas that require that, but you don't need to thoroughly replace with robots. For the time being, I would say we are pretty much the technology that are being introduced in Melaka plant currently is sufficient enough to sustain, for example, like, you know, up until 2020 or even a little bit more.
So while those Malaysians working at Honda's plant in Melaka may enjoy job security till at least 2020, their employment may be less certain a decade later. That's if Tony Seba's predictions for the global auto industry comes true by 2030.
We assume that some people, especially in the rural areas and the very wealthy, they're going to keep their cars. And even in our model, even assuming that by 2030, there's going to be the fleet is going to be 80% smaller, 40% of those existing cars by 2030 are going to be individually owned. But they're only going to contribute to 5% of the kilometers because individuals only use cars 4% of the time. So the 60% of the cars in 2030 that are fleet owned essentially are going to provide 95% of all the kilometers, passenger kilometers and then truck kilometers and so on, because they're going to be used essentially 10 times more every day, every month, every year, and so on and so forth. So yeah, there are going to be people still in 2030 who are going to own cars. But because of the vicious cycle that goes with every disruption, meaning that because all new cars after about 2021 are going to be electric, especially in the cities, gasoline stations are going to start disappearing and dealers are going to start disappearing, go bankrupt, essentially. And maintenance shops are going to start disappearing so that people who still own cars are going to have to drive first 10 kilometers out to fuel up and then 15 kilometers and then 20 kilometers and so on. So while TAS is going to get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper as more people adopt it, individually owned combustion engine cars are going to get more and more and more expensive to own, which means that, and that's the vicious cycle, that both car ownership and the internal combustion engine and petroleum industry are going to get into. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people are going to still own their cars.
And with that said, perhaps the future may not be so different after all. That's all the time we have this morning as we explore this recurring theme in 2017, disruption in transportation. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Year in Review on The Breakfast Grill. I'm Tan Chung Han for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U Mobile. Your passion drives our unlimited ideas.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.